Congress for a Healthy Planet in Miami, 1991. Tune in next week for the conclusion of this series. Thanks to Genevieve Vaughn, author of 36 Steps to a Gift Economy. Our website is www.wings.org. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in to Pathways, a show featuring conversations with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. Join me, host Paul O'Brien, or my co-host Donald Altman every Sunday morning from 8:30 to 9 a.m. You can find out more about the show or listen to the program archive at kboo.fm/pathways.
Quiet as often as I could have.
Good morning, Portland Pollies. This is Dr. Tony Zimbardi, and you are listening to Radical Romance, the show for those of you in or desiring of ethically non-monogamous relationships. I'm going to do the show a little different today because my interviewee, whose name is Chip, a friend of a friend, who works a full-time job and had to pre-record our interview with me over the weekend. So I'll be playing that interview in just a few minutes. But before I do, I'm going to start off the way I typically do with a couple of ethicist columns because I think they set the backdrop for your calls. And because the interview today is pre-recorded, I won't be taking calls until 45 minutes into the hour, so the last 15 minutes of the show. If you can call, please do. The phone number to call at that time would be 503-231-8187. You're listening to Radical Romance with Dr. Tony, and I'm going to go into my ethical dilemmas for now, and I'd love to hear about any ethical dilemmas you've experienced in relationships. When the time comes. Speaking of your relationships and ethical dilemmas, I came across a site while I'm always doing homework for this show and for you listeners. I came across something called the Align Council, mind-body therapy. And they're one of the few places that will accept polyamorous relationships for counseling. They do polyamorous affirming therapy, one of the things I found on their website is people are always curious if their primary partner might feel that they are replaceable, and that's something, a thought that apparently elicits a lot of anxiety within folks. You know, is this new person in our relationship better sex, more emotionally available, things like that. So if you've had those fears, please save them for the last 15 minutes of the hour. Meanwhile, I'll dive right on in. So here's this first dilemma for the New York Times ethicist. The heading is, "My old friend might be dying. Should I tell her I'm dating her ex?" She goes on to write, "About a decade ago, a close friend and her husband separated after a long marriage. We originally met through our children and bonded as she supported me through career challenges and our shared experiences with separation. My friend and I eventually drifted apart. Despite my attempts to reach out a few years ago, I never heard back. I also know her husband through a support group, and we developed our own friendship over time. 6 months ago, I learned she was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. More recently, her husband and I, both divorced, unexpectedly fell for each other. We have proceeded with care, mindful of the history. She has now reached out asking to reconnect. I postponed a meeting, feeling kind of paralyzed. I don't want to lie, but I dread telling her that I am dating her ex-husband, and while she is seriously ill, yet it feels cruel to simply disappear. What is the ethical thing to do here? How do I preserve honesty without causing unnecessary pain?" So the ethicist responds by saying, "You did not betray your old friend by falling for someone she was married to long after they separated. But as you recognize, you would be letting her down by ghosting her now." That's really all the ethicist has to say on that topic. It's true, it's the fair and honest, morally ethical thing to do. So I'm going to move over to the next ethical dilemma, which the heading is, "Should I tell my friend I had a fling with her ex? After attending a house party that my friend S hosted," we'll call her Sally, "I made a rather rash decision to text her the next day and hopefully strike up a fling. Surprisingly, she took the bait. Soon enough, we picked up momentum and enjoyed a month-long unofficial relationship. I did take some things into consideration before I decided to text her. For instance, I made sure that she was not in a relationship. She said she was only casually dating other people. I called it a rash decision because we've known each other for a year, and I was aware that we were kind of incompatible. It all ended rather smoothly. She then told me that before me, she dated our friend K, K-A-Y-K. We are all part of a small lesbian community. There's really no avoiding one another. Sally's now found herself in a serious relationship, and when she introduced her new girlfriend to us, Kay was visibly upset. Kay confided to me and our friends that Sally had broken her heart. Their relationship was serious. I had the impression was that it was casual after doing the math. How do I go about giving my side of the situation? How much am I obliged to disclose to Kay? How do I go about giving my side of the story without breaking Sally's confidence and making her look bad to everyone? The ethicist responds with, "You took steps to avoid exactly the sort of heartbreak that Kay and Sally's behavior and shifting preferences led to. That's all the ethicists had to say on that one. I'm curious, I'd love to hear at the end of the hour your thoughts on these kind of delicate situations. I know within the gay, and especially from what I hear from my lesbian friends, within the gay male and lesbian communities, they can be quite incestuous, so to speak, meaning friends dating people's other friends' exes is quite common. From what I hear, it sounds more so for women than for men. So those are the two ethicist questions for today. And again, please call me at the end of the hour, 503-231-8187, if you have any moral dilemmas of your own. And if you feel you need counseling with your primary partner or your partner's partner, or all three of you, Aligned Counsel is the place to go to. They affirm polyamorous relationships, and they provide counseling for all three parties involved. Thruples counseling, so to speak. I know that sounds terrible. So anyway, on to my interview. I interviewed a friend of a friend who's a dear person, a bisexual 41-year-old male with a polyamorous past. His name is Chip. And here's the interview. Please hold off all calls until the interview is over. I will take calls at the end of the 40... No, it's a 30-minute interview. At the end of the 30-minute interview. So please hold calls for now. I'll talk to you at the end of the hour.
Now, for today, I have a guest to interview named Chip. Chip, I've kind of known casually as an acquaintance for a few years. And he's here to talk about his past relationships and the experience with polyamory, bisexuality, those things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Okay, Chip, so can you tell me a bit about that past?
Oh, well, I would say that in college, I pretty much opened up, I would say, my sexuality. And I became pretty open to men and women. It's Sex Nerd Sandra. I don't know if you know that podcast, but it was a podcast I was listening to in around 2008. And I learned about, I forget that book. Well, it was the book about but it was about human sexuality and us being basically naturally non-monogamous. I mean, I started educating myself about kind of what I felt were pre-existing kind of things that were telling, society was telling me. So I started to really kind of challenge those things. I started to kind of even challenge my own attractions towards men. I think that was a big thing that I was pretty willing to kind of experiment with. And also, I think that I wasn't really into having any particular one person in a relationship so I could explore. And I think I was very clear. I like the word ethical. Mm-hmm. And so I really liked to communicate what I was doing. And I think that was part of my journey. It wasn't just, you know, going crazy.
I'm going to ask you something, though. It's interesting. We're a generation apart, and I, like you, in college, well, I had a college girlfriend that I was having sex with, and then she suggested we go to San Francisco for a summer. San Francisco, of all places. And so I came back and came out as gay, but to me, I think while I was still in college, all of my friends I noticed were coming out as bisexual. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I was no longer interested in women. So I felt like that term bisexual in college was just the last stop on the way to Gayville.
Mm-hmm. You know? I would say it's a controversial name. I mean, right? I've heard a lot of people have different beliefs on bisexuality, if it's even a legitimate thing. Right?
Yeah. Who said to me, maybe it was even our mutual friend Bob, that somebody said to me that you always see bisexual men living with a woman and maybe fooling around with men on the side, but you don't see women married to men and fooling around with women on the side.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there was a convenience for me in that, right? Being bisexual, I think that it was easier to manage the idea that I was with a woman and I was also potentially playing around with men, right? So I think that was, I think that is like a sense of ease in that situation. It was always more controversial when I was with a woman seeing other women. Yeah. I also think that, honestly, I attracted different kinds of women because I presented myself as bisexual. And I think that was also something I like to think of as a filter. Mm. I think that was a really good filter for people.
Put that into context for the listeners.
Well, so I think some women, if I were to mention if I was bisexual, I think some of I have gotten discussed. I have gotten a lot of different bad responses about me being bisexual. And I would have to say women were pretty, some were very rough with the sense that I would be wanting a in my mouth, you know? So I feel like I attracted a certain kind of person, right? So if I presented myself bisexual, it would get rid of most of the people I don't even want to be dealing with. So I guess that's what I mean by a filter. Me being a bisexual male, I got to meet, I would say, more likely people that I would be sexually attracted to. Because I'm a sapiosexual, so I think I need ideas to matter, I need what they're thinking to matter, and I need us to emotionally connect. Mm-hmm. So if we're not aligned and...
Yeah.
Our sexuality, it just, yeah. I really appreciated that filter.
Can you say more about what you think the experience of the women were?
You mean with me seeing men, or in what way?
Yes, how they responded to that.
I would say that if a woman was open to me being a bisexual, they were potentially turned on by it. And a lot of scenarios, I got to be with a man being watched. And that, I have to say, I was very interested in. I like voyeurism. Mm-hmm. So I think I like when I turn people on. So when I'm there, you know, having an experience with a man, being watched by a woman or other men or whoever. I definitely like being in a room, having people watch me, and being aroused by what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. And does it matter what gender the people watching you are?
No, it does not at all.
So you just like a human to watch?
I do. I really do. I submitted a film to Humpfest. Do you know Humpfest? Mm. It's a local festival here, run by Dan Savage. I think it's on its like 20th year or something. It's been around. Amateur porn film festival. Mm-hmm. And I submitted a film in 2017 or something. I ended up winning Best Sex.
How cool.
Yes.
For you. Congratulations.
Thank you. We won money, and it was amazing.
Just for having sex with someone on camera?
Yeah. My partner and I turned basically acro yoga into sex, okay. And we were backpacking while we were doing that. Okay. So we're in the mountains and, you know, Three Sisters, that
same area. Kind of, what was the word?
Acro yoga?
Yes.
So we're like aerobatics, almost like that. It's like one person is like the foundation, one person is like the leaf, the falling leaf, like, and you're kind of using each other's bodies to move around, balance, and we turn that into sex. While backpacking in the wilderness. So, I really liked people watching. That was amazing. I don't care what gender you are.
When you are performing on camera, are your partners always women? Or are they sometimes men? Or are they?
Well, for that one, I only did it once. That was a woman. Yeah. I haven't had a partner with a male that I had recorded anything. That was the only one I've done. I think it's really hard to find someone who's willing to perform on camera. I think I've tried.
It seems like when I was single in L.A. and dating, every single person I dated had done porn.
Yeah.
Like, that's L.A., I don't know.
That's L.A. yeah.
So where did you go with your life after college?
I started building homes in Vermont, and then I moved to Chicago, and that's when I kind of really, I guess, am I allowed to say slut? Or
yes.
Okay. I'm definitely became an ethical slut in Chicago.
Is that Dan Savage's term?
No, I think it's these two women, I believe, wrote, I'm sorry, I don't remember their names, but they wrote the book Ethical Slut.
Ethical Slut. Yeah, I've
yes. And that's one of those books that I read that really influenced me. Oh, Sex at Dawn, that's the other one. Christopher Ryan, that's the other one that I was referencing that earlier.
Definitely rings a bell.
Yeah, and that was about, you know, back in the day when we were, you know, a tribe. Non-monogamy was our norm. So we've been more non-monogamous in human history than not. So anyway, that kind of literature, Ethical Slut, there's a lot of different books that I was influenced by.
I'm curious, do you feel comfortable talking about you're in a monogamous relationship now?
Yes, I'm in a monogamous relationship. And I'm in a monogamous relationship, not because I necessarily choose to be in a monogamous relationship, but I choose to be with the person I'm with, if that makes sense. And I've had to navigate that with her. And my partner is a woman. And when we first started dating, she saw me make out with a man. And I think that kind of blew her mind.
How did that happen, that she just sort of saw you making out with a dude? Like, how did that happen? Where was she? Where were you?
I threw a party. I think I threw, like, a sensual party where everyone was wearing, like, fur, and we had the bathtub with these balloons, and it was, it was kind of a sexy party. I wouldn't say, like, a sex party, But people were dressed sexy, and she was just getting to know me, and I was really into this one guy. And we started making out, and we quickly realized how she had not experienced any of what I considered pretty normal. So it's been a lot of negotiating in that relationship.
Sure.
And a lot of talking through her feelings, right? And I mean, I think she felt jealous, right? Which I think is normal.
Yeah.
But she's also like she's from a Latin household, very conservative. I mean, it's even being gay is like not really discussed. Or, I mean, I think it's somewhat accepted in her family, but it's just not. Especially in open relationship, jealousy is very big in Latin culture. Honestly, from what I've seen,
I had a penchant for Latin men, and yes, they were all possessive and jealous.
Yes, very possessive. But you know, I don't know. It's been interesting. I love this person so much that I feel like I have. I wouldn't say sacrifice, but I feel like I'm. Willing to understand where she's coming from, right? And potentially build a life with this person. So I think the potential of having kids, I think, really has...
I was just going to ask you about that.
Yeah. I think that's really changed the way that I would say prioritize my values and my sexuality. And I think that's what has changed. I mean, I'm 41, and I do want to have a kid or kids. And I think that is a motivating factor.
Does your current partner want to have kids?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So we're actively trying. So we're having...
Cool. Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, it's the best thing to do, to be actively trying.
Well, you need to get busy, because I adopted 2 kids in my mid-40s.
Okay.
And so I was a mature dad. But I did find when I was going to drop them off at school in the mornings, there was a large percentage of other mature dads dropping off their kids as well. I was the only gray-haired dad. Although I was a tiny bit embarrassed one time when I went to pick up my boys. They initially did go to the same school for kindergarten. So as I was walking away with my older son, who was maybe 6 at the time or 7 at the time, I heard somebody ask my younger son, "Who's that, your grandpa?" No, I'm talking about me. It's because I had all gray hair. But yeah.
I guess I'm concerned about that. I have fear around that. I also have fear, I think, just about getting older. So yeah. I think that the clock is ticking. I mean, is how it kind of feels.
I think you're right. I wouldn't do it any older than what I did. So they were technically born when I was 40 and 41.
Okay.
My boys.
So pretty similar time.
Yeah.
For if I was to have a kid soon.
Yeah, so get cracking.
Yeah, we're trying.
Nice.
I didn't realize how difficult it was going to be, actually. I feel like that was a lie that was given to me as a kid. It's not as easy to conceive. There was a real fear put in me, but anyways. We're hoping for the best.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
So can you say a little bit more? Is there a story you thought you might tell while we were doing this interview about your past and your experiences?
Well, I did date a sex worker for a while.
Uh-huh.
And that was, I was actually in a book that was published. I was interviewed about other partners of sex workers. It's called The Gentleman's Club. And that was a fascinating thing in non-monogamy. I feel like that was a pretty impactful experience for me. My partner being a full service sex worker. Uh-huh. And
it's interesting that you brought up this topic, because my most popular couple who sat in that chair in the past year, they both came in, the man, they live together, they're not married, they're both in their 40s, and they both have kids from when they were younger, and they were my most popular couple last year. He was super nice guy, and she is a professional, well, she calls herself a professional oral sex worker.
Oh, nice.
That's the only thing she does.
Mm-hmm.
Is fellatio for a living.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I hope that she makes lots of money.
I hope she does too. I have no idea. She's very sweet. I worry that maybe she doesn't.
Yeah. And that's why I'm pro sex work for sure. Because people who are doing that should be making a sufficient amount. I mean, that is an incredible service. Let's just call it that what it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like that whole dynamic with her having sugar daddies and all of that, that really changed, I guess, what energy I was putting towards my relationship, other relationships, and kind of getting exhausted. I think that's when non-monogamy kind of exhausted me. And I guess the other thing that I think is more interesting than that is a lot of my experience with men, I think, is interesting. Being a bisexual male, I think this is like something that came up a lot, was with gay men versus bisexual men, right? I had a lot of positive experiences with bisexual men. men who I felt were a lot more gentle, were a lot more understanding. And I had, I would say, many experiences with gay men that was not pleasant.
Sorry to hear that. How so?
Well, I think, look, I'm not going to pretend to feel like I can relate to women as far as prey. But that is kind of what my experience was there was a certain aggression that I had experienced many times with gay men. And it was somewhat unpleasant. And I feel like it pushed me to experience and find my experience with men with bisexuals.
I'm curious because, you know, as a gay man, we sometimes can fade into the crowd, so to speak, if we're not acting like Charles Nelson Reilly or something like that. How does a bisexual man find another bisexual man?
Well, there's apps out there. So like Thrinder, which is like this non-monogamous, I would say bisexual, but more straight app. Right? So there's that, and also going to sex parties. I mean, I feel like there's communities here, actually in Portland. This is why I moved to Portland, that is a lot more accepting of me being a bisexual male. I have been in experiences where it was specifically with this party in the swingers, and the sense of me being a bisexual male made things very uncomfortable for everyone. And so I think I found a thread pretty much in Portland that had other men like me, right? That were
curious. Can you say what website for the listeners or?
Well, I mean, they were called, it was a group called, Friendly Friends. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't even know if that is, I don't even know if that was, gosh, I think it's okay for me to say that. But it was like a Facebook group, I think, is what started of that. And I would say that they were a bunch of men who were more open to bisexuality. Mm-hmm. And that drew me to them. And they also had girlfriends. And played around with some of the male friends. And yeah, that dynamic just seemed a little more kinder. I need tenderness. So I think that's why I ultimately always have felt more comfortable, I think, with women in general. I like that tenderness. Not that all women are tender, but... I have to say, with my experience with men, I would say the more kind, gentler men I really appreciated.
Now, here's what I'm curious about. You are in a monogamous relationship with a woman as a gay, as a bisexual male.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do with your bisexual self when you're in a monogamous relationship?
I mean, it's a good question. We talk about it a lot, right? And I have talked with her about potentially going to sex clubs, right? So we have gone to sex clubs. This person who is not into it. I mean, she's become more open, I think, honestly. I think she's learning who I am, right? I mean, we've been together for 5 years and we're still talking about these things. And I think that's super important. I think it's just important for me to be honest and open with her, number one. And so we have gone and seen people perform, or we've gone next to couples and been playful with each other and maybe touched the other couple. And I feel like I see men and I see women in that experience, you know? I don't know if I really care if it's men and or women. I think a sexual experience is what keeps my interest and curiosity. Mm-hmm. I like that. I like feeding that. I'm not ashamed of wanting to see people in a sexual space. Mm-hmm. I think that's important. Mm-hmm. So I think I incorporate that in our relationship. And I also, am open about, how I, my desires. And that's kind of just, I think I'm just going to keep doing that, right? I don't feel like I'm losing anything. I feel like I have a really good partner. And I think that's more of where I'm at in my life, mm-hmm. where I'm more focused on that. But I feel like I'm still able to explore my sexuality by going out to clubs or, even pornography. I mean, it's just being able to look and admire people. I think I need that.
So you go out to clubs? Does she come with you?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I guess that's the one thing that we've come to is like, look at, I want this part in my life. So I really want to do it with you kind of deal, my partner. And she feels the same, even though it probably scares the crap out of her.
You know, I don't know, I can't remember if we talked about this before the interview or during, but you said you want to have kids.
Yes, I do.
Once you have kids, when you're having sex with your partner, there's still always one eye watching the doorknob. If they're tall enough to turn the doorknob.
Right.
Which is when they're about 4 or 5. Some of them are tall enough to do that.
Right.
So, you never know. But having been in the same experience, not bisexual, but in an open relationship,
mm-hmm.
while having children, I can say, kids, it's a cliche that they say the darndest things, they'll ask anything, because they want to learn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one time my older son, who was maybe 10 at the time, the other one was 8 or 9, asked me one day as I'm driving them to school, said, Papa, all married people don't have a boyfriend or a girlfriend, do they? You know, because we each had a boyfriend on the side, me and my then husband. And I said, well, no, most married people don't. But our family is not like most families. You guys have two dads. We're just a different kind of family.
Mm-hmm.
So, does that answer your question? And he said, yes.
I mean, kids are so resilient. Yeah. Like, that's one thing I never...
Yeah, they are, you're right.
I've never been afraid of... People get so weird around kids about sexuality.
Yes. Oh, my God.
And it's just like, they are resilient, and even the way you even explained it is great. Look, you don't need to go in detail about your life and your sexuality, but you can explain it very simply to a kid. We're just not like everyone, and things are a little different.
I brought my kids... We before the interview, we were talking about California Men's Gathering,
mm-hmm.
to the AIDS Walk? But anyway, there was a party after, and it was, or it might have been a pride parade where a group of guys from the California Men's Gathering were marching, and I was with them, and I had brought my kids. And then there was a party after in the Hollywood Hills, the hot tub and all that. And the other men there, one in particular, became very upset with me. Mm-hmm. He didn't say that the party thing. Goodness, but he complained afterwards to everyone about my kids being there. Now, they did keep their bathing suits on.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the men had kept their bathing suits on, some didn't, but I said to my kids, well, you guys have seen naked men before. You've seen me and Dad around the house, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a big deal to them, but...
I mean, I grew up, my parents were naked with their friends in the hot tub. I mean, nudity was not a taboo thing in my life.
Right.
I mean, I grew up watching Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Uh-huh.
So,
yeah.
I mean, my parents, I think, yeah, it's just, if you make it a big deal, it'll be a big deal.
Exactly. You're right. You're 100% right. They take their cues from us.
Yes, yes. So yeah. If you're going to be weird about it, they're going to think it's weird.
Yes. You're right. Really. That's a great note to end on. So we're going to wrap up for today.
Okay.
Thank you, Chip, for coming in and being my guest for this week.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
You're most welcome. Maybe we'll do a sequel at some point in the future.
Oh, always open.
Okay, great.
Yeah, yeah.
Great. Well, thank you.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, everybody, I'm back live. This is Dr. Tony. If you have any comments you want to deliver my way or questions about the interview with Chip, call 503-231-8187, and I'm happy to talk to you about it. I did a little homework while I was listening to the interview as well. Chip described himself at one point as a sapiosexual, which I needed to look up because I just thought that sounds like a human being, a sapio anything, like we are Homo sapiens. Anyway, a sapiosexual is someone whose sexual attraction is based on intellectual compatibility. They get turned on sexually by a deep intellectual conversation which has connection. So in case you were wondering, that's what a sapiosexual is. Someone who's turned on by words, by your conversation, by connection, shared thoughts, not just the physical appearance. So that's one thing I learned in re-listening to this interview, which I had not heard that term before. The other thing I looked up for you listeners, which I had not known the authors of, the book, The Ethical Slut. He was right, it was written by two women, and their names, in case you go to look it up on Amazon or anywhere else, their names are Dossie Easton, D-O-S-S-I-E, and Janet Hardy, Janet H-A-R-D-Y. The Ethical Slut. I'm planning on adding that book to my library as well. If you have any call, please give me a buzz. Questions, I meant. If you have any questions about the interview, anything Chip said, anything related to the ethicist columns I read, 503-231-8187. This is Dr. Tony Zimbardi. You are listening to Radical Romance on KBOO FM. Lastly, another thing I took out of that interview and decided to look up. I don't know if it's still active, but Chip mentioned a Facebook group where he had found bisexual men called Friendly Friends. So if you happen to be on Facebook, see if you can find Friendly Friends and if that group is still around and active. Lastly, I had mentioned the Align Council. Under their heading, it says mind-body therapy, and that they offer a polyamorous affirming therapy, meaning therapy for throuples, quads, quints, what have you. Just look them up online. They're located here in Portland. The Align Council. I'm not endorsing the Align Council. I'm just suggesting that this may be a place where folks in polyamorous relationships can get seek help. Give it a shot. I've also heard, and I tried looking it up and was not too successful in getting much information on the internet, but that Oregon is close to being like Brazil and honoring polyamorous relationships or certifying them. If any of you have read anything about that, please let me know. 503-231-8187. I'll do a better job doing my homework next time and try to find any information I can on the state of Oregon offering certified, dignified, official to polyamorous relationships. I'm very curious, just couldn't find it when I was searching around. If you know more than I do, please give me a call, 503 231-8187. At this moment, my own boyfriend, partner, what have you, is out of state seeing friends, and when he shared with me all the things he needed to pack for his trip, it included sex supplies like lube, things like that. And I thought, okay, well, he's planning on having sex on this trip. Good for him. It's an interesting position to be in. Knowing when your partner is having, I won't say outside sex, but I'll just say additional sex to the relationship. If anyone has experience with this, feel free to call me, 503-231-8187. Having that information did not cause me to care about him any less than I do. He knows how much I love and support him, and I do. I love and support you, Stuart. You know that. So hope you're having a good time if you're listening to this out of state. If you're listening to this in the state of Oregon, let me know with any questions or thoughts about polyamory. 503-231-8187. Happy to take your calls. I'm curious, how many of you consider yourselves to be sapiosexual? Chip used that term, meaning you are turned on by that person's intellect and the intellectual conversation you have with them, and that gets you all hot and bothered for sex. Deep conversation. Is that your primary turn on? Or F the conversation and just go for the goods if you're that kind of individual. I'd be very, very curious to hear. Or if you'd like to be a guest on the show sometime and come in for a live interview, I'd love to speak with you. The number of the phone in the control room here is 503-231-8187. We have just a few minutes left. I do have an interview lined up for my next show, which is the second Wednesday in April. This show, Radical Romance, is on twice a month, second and fourth Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. of every month. I'm here. I do have an individual lined up for the next show, which I'm looking forward to all of you listening to. Meanwhile, let's all pick up a copy of The Ethical Slut if we're so inclined. I think I will, but I've not read it, so I can't promote it, but Chip seemed to like it. I suppose you can go online and look up the book or any comments left by its readers. The authors of that book were Dossie Easton and Janet Hardy. Dossie, D-O-S-S-I-E, Easton, E-A-S-T-O-N, Janet Hardy, J-A-N-E-T-H-A-R-D-Y, The Ethical Slut. Thank goodness we can still say that word on the air. Five zero three two three one eight one eight seven. The sand is going through the hourglass for this round of Radical Romance. The website I referred to earlier was the Align Council, subheading Mind-Body Therapy and Polyamorous Affirming Counseling for Thruples, Quads, Quints, all of the above. Whatever kind of your relationship you are in, they will affirm it and offer counseling for it. Look them up online. I can't officially endorse them. I have no relationship with them. I'm just passing on information. The Align Council. And I will throw out again the Netflix series that I love so much, which is called Vladimir, about a married heterosexual couple in an open marriage. Both have agreed that they can have sex with individuals outside of their marriage. They both play professors. And the wife in particular is completely hot and bothered by this new younger male professor. It's a really enjoyable series. All I can say is I watched it. I binge-watched it, meaning I watched it straight through over several hours one afternoon and loved it. Vladimir. Vlad is the name of the young male student that the wife gets all hot and bothered by. Maybe she also has some sapiosexual attraction since they are both professors. And my guess is that's what drew this married couple to each other in the first place. Their intellectual compatibility and attraction and abilities to have deep conversation. Sapiosexual, your word for today. See if you can use it in a sentence, indicating whether you are or are not a sapiosexual, mean you are turned on by intellectual connection. That's an aphrodisiac for you, intellectual compatibility. I'm a little bit of a sapiosexual myself, although I must say, when the other individual's easy on the eyes, may not help, but it certainly couldn't hurt. I would guess that women tend to be a little more sapiosexual than men. Men tend to be more of a visually oriented sexual partner, turned on primarily by physical attraction and possibly secondly by intellectual attraction. So those are my thoughts on attraction as we wind down this hour. I'm curious, of the two ethicist columns I read earlier, have any of you out there ever dated one of the exes of one of your friends, and how did that go? I've never done it. I guess it would put a strain on the initial friendship you have with a friend if you were dating one of their exes. I'd love to hear if you have been one of those individuals. 503-231-8187. Next show, I will have a cisgender female with a poly bi history. We had a cisgender bisexual male today, Chip. So I look forward to introducing my next guest the second week of April. That one story was sad, that one of the friends was dying and their person going on had fallen in love with their ex. I don't know if I'd want to hear that on my deathbed, would you? That one of your friends was dating one of your exes? I guess at that point you just say, oh, what the heck? How about it? It's a crazy world, the world of love, romance, and sex. I'm at a phase of my life right now where I have no doubts, no complications, no complaints about my love life. I'm happy with it. I'm happy in the relationship I'm in right now. I used to be one of those people who just couldn't relax and be happy with what I've got. I think that's one of the keys to life, is to be happy with what you've got. If you have a partner, why don't you turn to them tonight during dinner and tell them, I'm happy with what we have. I'm happy with you. You make me happy. Again, it may not help, but it certainly couldn't hurt. Give it a shot. And then call me in next time and let me know how it went. And on that note, I'm going to sign off for today and wish you all happy playing. See you the second Wednesday in April. Bye for now.
And maybe I didn't treat you quite as good as I should have. If I made you feel second best,
you did.
Girl, I'm sorry I was blind. You were always on my mind. You were always on my mind. And maybe I didn't hold you all those lonely, lonely times. I guess I never told you I'm so happy that you're mine. Little things I should have said and done, I just never took the time. But you were always on. We're always on my mind.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune into KBOO every third Saturday at 10 p.m. for Query. Dive into the spectrum of queer music as we explore artists across time and genre.
It's on my mind every hour of every day.
That's Query